Genesis chapter 24, and we'll read from the verse 1. Genesis 24 and the verse 1, "And Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house, that ruled over all that he had, Put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I will make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven, and the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. But thou shalt go unto my country, and to my kindred, and take a wife unto my son Isaac. And the servant said unto him, Peradventure the woman will not be willing to follow me unto this land. Must I needs bring thy son again unto the land from whence thou camest? And Abraham said unto him, Beware, that thou bring not my son thither again. The Lord God of heaven, which took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and which spake unto me, and that sware unto me, saying, Unto thy seed will I give this land, he shall send his angel before thee, and thou shalt take a wife unto my son from thence. And if the woman will not be willing to follow thee, then thou shalt be clear from this my oath, only bring not my son thither again. The servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and sware to him concerning that matter. And the servant took 10 camels of the camels of his master and departed, for all the goods of his master were in his hand. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, unto the city of Nahor. And he made his camels to kneel down without the city, or outside the city, by a well of water at the time of the evening, even the time that women go out to draw water. And he said, O Lord God of my master Abraham, I pray thee, send me good speed this day, and show kindness unto my master Abraham. Behold, I stand here by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city come out to draw water. And let it come to pass that the damsel to whom I shall say, Let down thy pitcher, I pray thee, that I may drink. And she shall say, Drink, and I will give thy camels drink also. Let the same be she that thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac. Thereby shall I know that thou hast showed kindness unto my master. And it came to pass, before he had done speaking, that behold, Rebekah came out, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, with her pitcher upon her shoulder. The damsel was very fair to look upon, a virgin, neither had any man known her, and she went down to the well and filled her pitcher and came up. The servant ran to meet her and said, Let me, I pray thee, drink a little water of thy pitcher. And she said, Drink, my lord. And she hasted and let down her pitcher upon her hand and gave him drink. And when she had done giving him drink, she said, I will draw water for thy camels also until they have done drinking. And she hasted and emptied her pitcher into the trough and ran again unto the well to draw water, and drew for all his camels. And the man wondering at her held his peace, to wit whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not. We'll end our reading there, trusting the Lord will bless his word to our hearts. And in this session then, we're looking at the subject of seeking the right wife. In Proverbs 18:22, it says, Whoso findeth a wife, findeth a good thing, and obtain a favour of the Lord. And it is a blessing then for a man to find a wife, and especially to know that that is the wife that the Lord has given to him. But it is a disastrous thing to find the wrong wife and to marry her. And most young men plan marriages based on the wrong criteria. And so a young man meets a girl, he becomes more friendly with her,
And maybe they enter into a relationship together, and they become more than merely being friends, and then he begins to think, I could marry this one. And by the way, you should never... you should never enter into a relationship if you have no intention of marriage. That would be something that is deceptive. So the young man, anyway, he's getting friendly, and they're perhaps already in a relationship, and he tells someone, I want to marry her. And the obvious question that follows is, why? Why do you want to marry this particular one and not others? And so he might give a list of reasons. She makes me feel good. We love talking to each other. I love talking to her. We get on really well together. I like her looks. I've never felt this way about any other person. And these are the various reasons that most young men give as their reason for entering into marriage. And we ought to ask the question then, are those the grounds for Christian marriage? And I put it to you that they are not. And there are many of those things that I have mentioned, and there is nothing wrong with them. And obviously it's good entering into marriage that you like to talk to her, and if the Lord has blessed you with someone that has good looks, then that's obviously something that is very good as well. But those things in themselves are not sufficient for marriage, because actually they are selfish reasons. When someone says, she makes me feel good, he's not so much thinking about the girl as opposed to himself. He talks about how I like her looks, or I love talking to her, and it's really him saying, she meets all my selfish needs. And I have these various needs that I want to be, that I want to find fulfilled, and I believe that she can fulfill these particular needs. What happens is that when that person marries, they suddenly discover that those grounds for marriage were very much insufficient. Because what happens when things begin to go wrong? And what happens when you've lost your job? What happens when you're going to lose the home you're in because you can't keep up with the mortgage payments? And your wife is so broken that she can't even talk to you. And it's not that she doesn't want to, but she just can't do it. Are you still going to love her? Because you said that you wanted to marry her because she did talk to you and it made you feel good about yourself. What if some illness strikes her down which alters her personality and her looks? Are you still going to love her then? If your reason for marriage was that she looked good and she had this beautiful personality, what happens whenever the personality has changed or the looks have changed? And suddenly the marriage is in a crisis. And the reason for that is it was built on the wrong foundation in the beginning. And so I want to seek to help the young men by giving some biblical counsel on choosing the right bride. And some of you have heard me speak of some of these things from this chapter before, and they give a list of different qualities, and I'm going to come back to those same qualities again, but hopefully take more time to look at them in this particular chapter. Very few would come to this chapter and would ask the question, how can I take advice from Genesis chapter 24 on the subject of marriage? Most people would think that's absolutely ridiculous. The idea of finding advice in this chapter, where a father sent his servant hundreds of miles away to speak to a woman and to bring her back, even though he had never met that woman before, even though Isaac had never met her before, and that he would bring her back all of those hundreds of miles to enter into marriage with Isaac. And that would seem to most absolutely ridiculous, but in fairness, this was a marriage that lasted. And the servant then was one that had great discernment. And though, in a sense, he was doing the choosing under God, he was seeking to be guided by God, though he was doing the choosing, he had that discernment. And the young man then would seek to have a choice of bride in God's time, he must have that discernment then that the servant had in this particular portion. So we're looking at choosing the right bride. And first of all, I want to see how there was a consideration of her pedigree. Abraham refused to permit Isaac to marry a Canaanite woman, and that was the whole reason why the servant was sent out. In verse 3, I will make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven, and the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. And so Abraham really was saying, I can't choose a bride for Isaac because Isaac cannot marry a woman of Canaan. And he sensed that it would be wrong, that it would be sinful for Isaac to marry a woman of Canaan. And therefore he was saying to the servant, you must go and you must bring a woman from Mesopotamia, from the land where I originally came from. And the reason for that was Abraham recognized that to marry a Canaanite would be to act contrary to the law of God. And that statement that I have made, that Abraham knew that to marry a Canaanite would be to act contrary to the law of God. And some would take issue with that and they would say, well, sure, Abraham lived long before the law of God was given, as in long before the law of God was given in its written form. But though Abraham did live long before Moses, that does not mean that Abraham knew nothing of the law. And so though the law was not given in its written form and in that summarized form, the moral law and the summarized form of the Ten Commandments, that didn't happen until Mount Sinai. God's people in the generations before that most certainly did know the law of God. If you look over a couple of pages to Genesis 26, in Genesis 26 and verse 5, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And that verse makes it abundantly clear. Abraham did know the law of God. And I believe he knew God's law on this particular matter. In Deuteronomy 7 and verse 3, it speaks of how the children of Israel were not to marry the Canaanites. And I believe personally that Abraham knew that that would be wrong for Isaac to marry a Canaanite. The whole purpose of that actual law was to prevent idolatry coming in among the people of God. And Abraham sensed that danger, and therefore he said, a bride must be sought from my own kin. And if you turn with me then to 2 Corinthians chapter 6, we have a New Testament application of the principle that Abraham was speaking of. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and the verse 14. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and the verse 14, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness? What fellowship hath light, or what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? Be ye not unequally yoked. And the words here, of course, have many different applications, but they certainly do apply to the issue of marriage. Do not be unequally yoked. And for one then that is a spiritual child of Abraham, for one that is of a household of faith, it would be a sin for him to take one who is a Canaanite, one who is not the Lord's. One who is a child of Abraham must seek one of his own type. He must seek one who is a child of the Lord. In 1 Corinthians 7 and the verse 39, the context there has to do with the remarriage of a widow. So it's someone that is saved and their spouse has died, and so that marriage union has been broken by death. And in verse 39, 1 Corinthians 7, 39, the wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. But if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. And so there is a binding law when someone gets married. There is that law that keeps them together. But in death, that law is broken. And so the widow is permitted to remarry, but Paul here says there is this very important caveat. She is to marry only in the Lord. And what is true for marriage of the widow is absolutely true for marriage for the young person who's never been married before. The young Christian is to marry only in the Lord. And I believe not only are they to marry only in the Lord, that a young man that is going on with God ought to find not only a young woman that professes faith, but one that is as committed to God's work as he is. So if you have a young man who is on fire for God, and he has a desire to serve God, and he's committed to the local church, not only should that young man seek to find a child of God, but he must desire someone who has that same passion for the things of God. So if he marries someone that has more interest in her wardrobe than the Word, or more interest in parties than the prayer meeting, he's going to find that that's going to be a hindrance to him. So he needs to find someone with that same zeal after the things of God. Now, otherwise there will be a tension in that marriage. And there is then to be consideration of the woman's pedigree. Is she a child of God and truly going on with the Lord? Then I want to see, secondly, he is to give consideration to her perspective or her outlook. And under that I want to think, first of all, of how the young man is to ask the question, is this girl submissive? And does she show evidence of a submissive type of character? If you look at verse 4 again, Genesis 24, verse 4, but thou shalt go unto my country and to my kindred, and take a wife unto my son Isaac. Now, whenever Abraham said that to the servant could immediately see a problem. Here am I, leaving Canaan behind for a time and going all these hundreds of miles away to Mesopotamia, and I'm going to approach a girl and I'm going to say to her, will you come with me hundreds of miles away to Canaan, to a place that you have never been to, and to marry a young man that you have never met? The most likely response would be, definitely not. And so the servant, seeing that as an issue, he says in verse 8, if the woman will not be willing to follow thee, then thou shalt be clear from this thine oath. And really what Abraham was emphasizing was this, that if the girl will not submit to you, if she will not submit to the word that you are speaking, abandon it straight away. If she's not going to submit to the word that you are bringing, then she's not the one, because if she won't submit to you as a servant, how will she ever submit to my son Isaac as a wife submitting to a husband? And so the servant then was being brought to see that this was something of a test. There was a test of submission. If she would not submit to a servant in that type of submission, then she wasn't going to submit in marriage. And an unsubmissive wife in marriage would be detrimental to marriage. And so you can see how logical this particular matter is that Abraham is presenting to the servant. And the young man then, as he considers the issue of marriage, he must consider the girl's outlook as far as this idea of submission is concerned. And usually a young man has the opportunity to see a girl in her own environment, to see her in terms of relationship with her parents. And if a young man finds that that girl speaks in very negative terms to her parents and speaks very disparagingly about her parents, the warning bells ought to be ringing immediately. If this is how she behaves at home, in her home, if this is how she treats the people that have raised her, then how is she going to treat me as a husband? If this is the way she speaks to her father after living in this house for 16, 17, 18 or more years, how is she going to speak to me whenever we come back home from our honeymoon and we settle back down into life? Is her attitude to me going to be any different to the attitude of her father? The answer is, it's not. If she has been rebellious in her own home, then it's going to be no different in the marriage, or very unlikely that it's going to be different in the marriage. The young man also should consider how she behaves in the house of God and in the work of God. Is she continually complaining about the way things are done in God's house? Does she speak critically of those who are in leadership in God's house and show no respect for them? If that's the case, then she's not going to be very respectful to the one that God has given to her as a spiritual head. And so there is to be this question, as the young man considers her perspective, is she submissive? But he also ought to ask the question, is she selfish? In verse 17, the servant ran to meet her and said, "Let me, I pray thee, drink a little water of thy pitcher." And whenever I preach in this particular portion in relation to the brides in Genesis, I emphasize that this was a test. And so the servant had really put this before God. And the servant had said, "I'm going to approach a girl and I'm going to say to her, can I have a drink? And if this is the one that God has chosen, then she will say, yes, you take a drink, I will give you a drink, and I will give to the camels as well." And not only was this merely a test providentially, but I believe the servant was also testing her on this very matter. Is she selfish, or does she give consideration to others? And so in verse 18, she said, "Drink, my lord," and she hasted and let down her pitcher. And then, after he had drank, she then said in verse 19, "I will draw water for thy camels also." And so she was under no obligation, you might say, to help him in the first place. He was a stranger. He wasn't from this locality. But not only was she eager to help him, but she actually had great consideration for the camels as well. It says there that she hasted and let down her pitcher. She was enthusiastic to help out this man and enthusiastic to see that the animals had a drink as well. And so there is to be this question, does this girl think only of herself? Does she think only of what she has to do? Or is she always thinking of others? If you find that she is one who is thinking of others, you find someone that has good character, one who has a good outlook, and one that has a good perspective. Such was Rebecca. I want to see then, thirdly, that there is to be consideration of her presentation. Because if you look at verse 14, "Let it come to pass the damsel to whom I shall say, let down thy pitcher, I pray thee, that I may drink. And she shall say, drink, and I will give thy I'll drink thy camel's drink also. Let the same be that which thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac." And it says in verse 15, "It came to pass before he had done speaking that, behold, Rebecca came out." And then verse 16, "The damsel was very fair to look upon, a virgin, neither had any man known her." And I want you to notice those words, "the damsel was very fair to look upon." Now, while the servant wasn't basing all of his decision upon looks, nowhere near that was he basing a decision upon her looks, nonetheless, the scripture does bring out that detail that she was fair to look upon. And obviously, if you look at verse 14, "Let it come to pass that the damsel to whom I shall say, let down thy pitcher," he was going to make a judgment based on appearance. And so he was open to the possibility that there might be someone come to that well, and he would immediately say, no in his mind, based on what he saw. What does that tell us? There is something in appearance. Now, and I'm not speaking merely of physical beauty, but there is something in how a person presents themselves. And there is something then in how a young lady presents herself. Before I entered the ministry, as you know, I trained in nursing. And back then, when people were training in nursing, they had to cover different aspects of nursing practice before they moved on to the area that they were going to qualify in. And that meant then in our first year of nursing, there were areas that we had to work in that we had no real interest in. and sometimes areas that you really didn't even want to be anywhere near the place. And my chief dread was maternity, for obvious reasons. And before I went in that placement, I was in great dread about it, but before I got onto that ward, there'd been someone there the week before, another nursing student, and I don't know actually what had happened, but obviously they turned up every day a bit scruffy looking, whether she didn't brush her hair or tie her laces right or whatever it was, but the ward manager was really turned off by her appearance. The first day I arrived in the ward, within the first hour, the manager asked me for my portfolio. I thought, that's very strange, I've only been here. And she took the portfolio and she wrote in it that Philip had turned up in work, well presented, and had shown a great attitude toward this placement. And I was amazed by that. That just by the way I had turned up, and obviously everyone has given the uniforms, it wasn't to do with what I had chosen to wear, but it was just obviously the fact that I'd brushed my hair or whatever before I went out through the door, and that my shoes were brushed. That made her make a decision about me based on my appearance. Now, that is true. If a careless, slovenly, dishevelled appearance reveals a careless attitude in a person's character, that is something then that we ought to be reading. If someone's appearance reveals something about their character, then we ought to be willing to give some consideration to that. More importantly than that, surely these words, they open up to your attention the whole issue of modesty. For we live in a day of gross immodesty. We live in a time when young women in the world are trying to expose as much as possible when they go out through the door. And for a young Christian then seeking to find the right wife, he ought to be immediately turned off by someone that is immodest in his dress. What is the motivation of a young girl who wants to expose as much as possible to the world? Evidently her motivations are far from holy. They're far from godly. And they're far from pleasing in the sight of the Lord. And so that type of modesty ought to turn the young man off immediately. He recognizes that if the young man, or the young woman, sorry, has no respect for her body, that she doesn't cover it up, then she is not suitable as marriage material. And therefore, there is to be some consideration of her presentation. And I want to see, fourthly, then, there is to be consideration of her politeness. In verse 18, she said, "Drink, my lord." And she hasted and let down her pitcher upon her hand. And isn't it interesting that this young girl, she met a servant that she had never met before, and as she came and talked to this absolute stranger, she addressed him exceptionally politely. She said, "Drink, my lord." She showed a great respect to him, even though she knew nothing about him. That is something that we ought to pay consideration to. Is the one that you have set your hopes on as far as marriage is concerned, how does she behave when she's at the checkouts? How does she behave when someone walks into her when she's walking down the street? Those little incidents and how she responds will give you great clues to the character of that particular person. If a girl is disrespectful before marriage, she's not going to show much in it. And these are all things then that the young man ought to consider. Moving on then, fifthly, to see he ought to give consideration to her purity. In the verse 16, it says, "And the damsel was very fair to look upon, a virgin. Neither had any man known her." Now the particular Hebrew word there for virgin in itself does describe what is meant. It's interesting that the record here makes it abundantly clear not only that she was a virgin, but actually goes on to define it. A virgin, neither had any man known her. Nobody had known her intimately. And if she was to enter into marriage then with Isaac, she was going to enter into marriage as one that was pure. She was going to enter into marriage as one that was not defiled. If a young man finds himself in a situation where a young woman is trying to entice him to neglect his purity, and he finds a young woman who is trying to allure him into intimacy before marriage, he ought to see a great warning in that. He ought to flee immediately from her. Remember Joseph as the woman back there in Potiphar's house, Potiphar's wife, was trying to allure him. He ran. 2 Timothy 2:22, flee also youthful lusts. What a blessing it is for a young man to come to his wedding night pure, and to know that his bride is pure as well, that they have both been kept pure by God's grace. And this is certainly something that ought to be considered by the young man. I want to see then, finally, there is to be consideration of her productivity. If you think about this whole incident of coming to the well, can we not say of Rebecca that she was a very industrious type person? She came to draw water when perhaps others neglected their duties. The very fact that she was here showed that she was industrious. And not only was she there, but she was willing to do things that were beyond what was actually expected of her. Her father did not ask of her to go to the well to help any Joseph that would happen to be there. She was only going to get water for their animals and for their needs. But she was industrious. She delighted in work, and she was eager to do it. She wasted no time in getting to it. If you look over with me then in Proverbs chapter 31. In Proverbs chapter 31, and the words of this chapter, I would encourage you to read through this chapter yourselves at a later time. They are full of great advice concerning the whole subject of marriage. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. And the chapter is speaking of the issue of marriage, because in verse 10, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. And the word virtuous there is actually a translation of a word that has the idea of strength. And in this case, obviously, it's talking about strength of character, which is why it's translated virtuous. A woman of great character, a virtuous woman. Now, what is the description of Lemuel concerning a virtuous woman? The overriding advice of King Lemuel in this portion is that a virtuous woman is an industrious woman, a woman that works. In verse 13, she seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hands. In verse 15, she riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household, and a portion to her maidens. In verse 20, and she stretcheth out her hands to the poor, yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. And you can see in those verses that I've read, and there are many more that we could take time to read, that what King Lemuel really is emphasizing is that this virtuous woman is one who does work. And really what he is advising is that when you are considering the whole issue of marriage, give great consideration to this matter. Is she one who is willing to work? And if you think about how appropriate that is, because evidently, as someone enters into marriage, if the Lord gifts that couple with children, there is much work that is involved in that. If the man is out during the work, or perhaps at night, if that's his work pattern, at work, as he leaves the responsibilities of home for that time in the hands of his wife, he needs one who is the worker. And so how wise it is then that he finds someone that is industrious. Now, this is not the only characteristic that Lemuel is advising, because he really is showing that this characteristic must be with others that I have mentioned to you today. For example, in verse 20, she stretcheth out her hand to the poor, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. So she not only works, but she considers others. In verse 26, she openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. And so there is that kindness, that politeness in her. But overall, if you look at verse 30, favour is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. This is what the man wants then. One that fears the Lord. And one of the chief characteristics of that actually will be that she is willing to show her fear of the Lord and a willingness to work. And turning back then to Genesis chapter 24, as we think of Isaac and how he came to marry Rebecca, what were the grounds for this marriage? The grounds were not, she makes me feel good about myself. The grounds were not, I find her nice to talk to. The grounds were not, she's nice to look upon. Now, all of those things were true in this marriage, but they were not the grounds for the marriage. If you look in verse 14, towards the middle of the verse, the servant says, she shall say, drink, and I will give thy camels drink also. Let the same be she that thou hast appointed. And the servant then believed that there was one that God had appointed for Isaac. And whenever the servant then was coming back to Isaac with her, he believed that he had found the one that God had appointed. Why did Isaac marry Rebekah? Because he believed that Rebekah was the one that God had appointed. If you look at verse 51, Genesis 24, 51, behold, Rebekah is before thee, take her and go, and let her be thy master's son's wife, as the Lord hath spoken. And even the family, while they were reluctant to let go of Rebekah, they had to acknowledge, the Lord hath made it clear, Rebekah is the choice. The Lord hath spoken. Now, what is significant about that is that God had not spoken with an outward voice from heaven. God had not spoken out of heaven and said, Rebekah is the chosen one for Isaac. What then did the family mean, the Lord has spoken? They had to confess God had spoken through providence, that God had spoken through the test beside the well. And the servant then, he was going home convinced, the Lord has spoken. The Lord has guided. I was in the way that the Lord led me. And therefore, as he related that to Isaac, Isaac could say, this is God's choice for me. And how did he respond? In verse 67, Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent and took Rebekah, and she became his wife. And he loved her, and Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. He believed that she was God's gift to him. And since he believed that she was God's gift to him, he took her and he loved her. And it wasn't that he fell in love with her, as the world talk about today. He saw that she was God's gift to him, and he chose to love her. Love, in that true sense, is a choice. And he chose then, by God's grace, that since God had given, he would love. And there is in all of this then a wonderful application for the young man. Why, or it could of course be someone that's older, but why is the young man to take a bride? He is to take a bride because he believes this is the one that the Lord has led me to. This is the one that God is giving me to marriage. And that then is a good basis for marriage. Because if I believe that this is the one that God has given me to marry, what happens when things begin to tumble round about me? What happens when my job is gone? What happens when I can't keep up the mortgage payments? And what happens when my wife no longer finds that she can speak to me? Well, I can still love her because I did not marry her because of all of those other reasons that I mentioned at the beginning. I married her because God has given her to me. And it's still true that God has given her to me, and therefore I will still love her, no matter what seems to be going wrong. And seeing then that this is the one that God has appointed, that this is the one that God has led me to, that is the greatest grounds for Christian marriage. And just bringing this to a close then, I want to give a couple of very simple words of advice in closing. And that is, firstly, don't be blind to a girl's serious flaws. Now, we all have flaws, and none of us here are perfect. And we all, if we confess it, are very far from perfect. And no young man coming to marriage should think that he is the greatest young man that could be given to that woman. And no man in marriage should think that he's the greatest possible husband. Otherwise, we're very blind to our own shortfallings. And so we're not going to find the perfect young woman. But nonetheless, we shouldn't be blind to a girl's serious flaws. There is that common statement, love is blind, marriage is an eye-opener. And it is true that as a young man finds himself in a relationship, he can be very blind to the obvious. And everybody else sees that she is so unsuitable, but the young man himself can't see it because his version of love has blinded him. And therefore, the young man needs to be willing to listen to advice. And if a Christian, and especially if it is a concerned parent, comes and they say, look, you need to be very careful here. There are various things that I want to show you. Don't throw your head up in a tantrum and say, well, what would you know? Your parents just don't want you to make mistakes, perhaps that they have made or they've seen others make. It would give them no joy to see their son in a bad marriage. Therefore, don't be blind to a girl's serious flaws. And the other second piece of advice is simply don't give up on a high ideal. Because evidently, if you are to follow the principles that I have showed you from Genesis 24, there aren't very many young women in our day that fit into the Rebecca model. There aren't very many young women that are showing the characteristics that I have demonstrated to you. And therefore, it would be very easy for you to think, well, I can't find anyone that fits that criteria, so I'll settle for less. Please do not settle for less. See it as Abraham did. Abraham saw that if this would not be the right wife, better to come home without her. And how true for you. Do not settle for one who is not according to the model that we have in God's word. If she's not according to the model in God's word, better to be without her. Because what tragic consequences will follow if you enter into that wrong marriage. Isaac needed a godly wife. In the life of Isaac, God was the God of provision. Remember how he asked the question going up the mountain about the lamb, and the Lord said God will provide himself a lamb. God had done that. And now God had provided for Isaac a bride. Isaiah 30 in the verse 18, therefore will the Lord wait that he may be gracious unto you, and therefore will he be exalted that he may have mercy upon you, for the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are they that wait for him. And blessed are they then that wait on God's choice and that have the one that God provides. And trust the Lord has blessed those thoughts to all of our hearts.